to the fastest 2 hours in talk radio, the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, and everybody got a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb to help the economy. My very special guest today is having a few problems with his connection, so I'll be popping in the, phone numbers for him to the studio to get him up. But his name's Richard Miller. Now, many of you may have heard of Navy SEALs and how they are kind of the elite soldiers of the United States. So Richard Miller is actually one of the guys who set up that very program. He was known as Dr. Rick Spooky Miller or something of that nature during his course in the intelligence services, black ops, and what have you. So he is a qualified physicist who, through the course of many of his workings for the U.S. government, went around and had some really, really strange experiences, and actually, instead of remaining in the consciousness realm, the physics realm only, he, in fact, went into what's known as consciousness and studies within those particular fields. These things he led to the invention of the what's it called again? The thing where you lie detectors, you know, how you measure the sweat on somebody or whatever, and through the rates of perspiration, you can tell whether or not they are, in fact, telling you the truth about a particular item. So he was the man to develop that technology. And it'll be interesting, of course, how many times we've listened to even friends, family, or anybody else, whether that be a politician or somebody within a position of trust, one could always wonder, where exactly does the truth lie within things? I feel that the world itself is a very confusing, difficult place, and that's done so because of lies, because of manipulation, because when we look at any topic nowadays, regardless of whether or not they are in the past, the present, or the future, the understanding dawns on me that my comprehension of all of these things is based upon only my experiences, the things that I've heard, the things that I've seen. And it's fairly obvious that there are many things that I have not seen, many things that I have not heard, hence I would not know the truth even if it was told to me. This is the world that we live in, ladies and gentlemen, and I believe this is something that's pure, because have you ever had a child ask you, why, daddy, and they keep asking you why, and by the end of the conversation, they've asked why so much that you don't even know who you are anymore. And my field of being in talk radio, it means that primary research is a time-consuming thing, and it's very, very difficult to know what's going on unless you hear from the people who actually were in the middle of it. Now, Rick Miller, as he likes to be called, hasn't actually really done anything for the last 35 years. Since his experiences in the 70s, and only now, after meeting up with Dr. Nick Begich, who's one of the people who exposed HAARP and weather control and weather manipulation, became friends with him and encouraged him to come and speak out about his experiences, which are remarkably plentiful. And I've listened to a number of interviews with him, and frankly, I'm going to do an awful lot of listening during this interview because, frankly, he's a man who bears no interruption. Rick Miller, welcome to the program.
Good morning. What time is it today, there? Sir?
It's 11:07 local New Zealand time, AM.
You're in the morning. That means I'm talking to the future. That's very cool.
Oh, you're absolutely talking to the future here on this
one. You know, it's kind of like feeling a little bit like that with all the weird things going on and everything. I'm so terribly sorry about my computer. I had something grabbed it right while we were about to go on the air.
It happens.
Interesting. You like metaphors?
I do like metaphors.
Yeah. Well, Gregory Bateson said it best when he said, "What is your metaphor but to serve your paradox?" It sounds I have a picture of two ox out in the field.
I thought a paradox was a half-bird, half-oxen creation by Monsanto.
Who knows what it really is? Mostly what I call it was catching flies. Back when I did it, you know, we knew about aliens, but really, we were more worried about what the Russians were doing. Actually, the Yugoslavians. Czechoslovakia, especially, had some serious research coming out of it in astrology. They called it cosmobiology, and they had other things like Yanov and the lunar sex cycle of a woman, and we were checking all of that out because, you know, it was like having an edge. It was fringe science, that kind of thing.
Well, could you take us back? How did you get into all of this? Because when I talk to activists, whistleblowers, people who are simply coming out and saying things that are very much not of the norm...
I wouldn't have called myself a whistleblower. I'm going to suggest that it's time to start occupying one's mind before you even think about Wall Street. People aren't... They're like, how did Dr. Lenny put it to me? He said there's one person born with total awareness, one person born with total evilness, and four others that don't have a clue. And that's basically what the world is like right now. I'm watching a zombie would be probably East L.A. when they're out of food. The craziness people go through when they panic. And, of course, the new hobos that are coming off the river look right out of a movie. They drag their feet and they're looking like they drool. It's really scary. It's like there's a change happening in everything. Now, I don't know what it all means. But I didn't come out of the woods. Basically, my story was that when I woke up, when I was working in anesthesiology, I was doing mind control studies for the Navy. This was after I was a Navy SEAL, and I was a physicist. And so we were doing, Delgado was in the lab next to mine, and he was doing chip implants in monkeys. This is before he went to Yale. And Dr. Moore was doing drug studies with ketamine, telepathine, and BZ. And I was the one doing all the microwave studies and dosimetry on the body, that kind of thing. And with that said, I realized that what I was making was weapons. You know, Commander Solo is the first ordnance that's now used before anything else is done to a given country, like Afghanistan. You'll notice the first ordnance
Could you define Captain Solo for me? Commander Solo?
Yeah, it's Commander Solo is a single aircraft that has, back at the time, had 360 computers in such a kind of a quantum computation algorithm that they could process large bodies of information like a P-300 wave and then beam it down at the enemy. It was used microwave, 0.3 to 3 gigahertz. And it worked. It worked really well. And Alan Frey was the one that first developed it, and then it was given to us. Most of that work was at the UW and a couple of other Argonne, where we were doing studies on the West Coast. Basically, it was, we called it synthetic telepathy. Essentially, what it does is it uses a tight, very narrow beam of microwave at 0.3 to 3 gigahertz. That's verging on quantum mechanical levels. And it would cause the temporal lobes to heat up and begin ringing. And then you could heterodyne voices, you know, audio onto that signal. You could hear it in your head without going through the ear or any of those dielectric processes. And so,
you'd be capable of using microwaves in a sense to broadcast audio signals directly into the brain.
That is correct, yes. And so, of course, goes with all of that, the sublimbal, liminal, where you're not sure it's your voice, you know, your inner voice, or something else. Now, how do you defend on that? Well, what was that one movie with your Aussie friend that was, you know, the what is he? I forget what he's called. He was a road warrior. Well, they have pictures of him and his kids with aluminum foil wrapped around their head, and that was ridiculous. That was funny. But really, the way the Navajo put it to me is, quote, man does not have rights, he has responsibilities. Like if he wants to be free, he doesn't have a right to be free, he has a responsibility to be free. And so, and with that venue, man has a responsibility for the thoughts he chooses to entertain. And so that's why training the mind and being disciplined in certain ways would preclude, you know, taking on information that may not have come from you and is trying to sidestep you, like a dream telepathy or some of the other things we used to do.
And I was asking, I asked this of a lot of guests, and I'm interested to hear your answer. What did your father do for a living?
My dad. Now, my dad was a radioman, first class, and in the Navy, and he... when the war was over, he went back to CREI and got a degree in engineering and then worked at the Boeing Scientific Research Laboratories under plasma physics. That's interesting that you'd ask that. Dad was an engineer, or tech. And in my high school years, that's where it all really started. I did science fair projects in 1960 and 61, that was my junior and senior year in high school, that were then, 2 years later, used on the Mariner 1 to actually measure the amount of water on Mars. And that's when old man DuPont put a bullseye on me as a draft pick. And then from then on, mostly my life was orchestrated with a variety of different professors and subjects that I studied. And actually, when I actually left physics in the late 70s, I think they kind of encouraged that because I'm working back with Navy again and basically doing what I want to do, not what they asked me to do, of which I, even back then, I was a GS-18, so I could have quit. I wasn't forced to do it. It's just that when I realized what I was doing, I left the military and went into farming. And for the last 35 years, I've been a dirt farmer. And congressman over here on this country call me the postman because I have a photographic memory, and I'm in agriculture, and I'm in advanced alternative agriculture. I have a 5-volume book coming out called The Encyclopedia of Alternative Agriculture, and that's, you know, kind of like what I've been doing for the last 35 years. And it was in...
What exactly is a dirt farmer? Could you define that?
You mean small fields? I did alternative ag. I chaired under two different governors here in the state of Oregon, the New Crops Development Board for the Oregon Department of Ag. This governor doesn't even have that anymore because guess what? Oregon is no longer an agricultural community. It's crazy what's happening over here. We're losing our green belt. It's that's what made America strong, was our farming. And anybody that would think differently, I'm wondering what planet they were grown on. That's why I went into ag. It's probably, I think a good buzzword might be prepper agriculture. That's a good word, you know, because when the food, when the grid goes down, one of the first things that's going to happen is there's going to be a shortage of food. We're currently, for example, experiencing a global event right now, this moment, in weather. Nobody's really talking about it other than the storm on the East Coast right now. But the drought this summer that devastated our corn crops are going to show such starvation and pain in 2013 in Africa and Asia.
Well, hold on just a second there, Rick. We're coming to break. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Rick Miller, the ex-dirt farmer, ex-SEAL, ex-Navy SEAL trainer, is my guest, and we will be right back in just a few minutes, folks. Don't you go anywhere. Gentlemen, nice beautiful dance music. We like to woogie it down in the Schwarzenegger sense of the word. While we wear our nice skull and bones belt buckles, as we got from my uncle who used to be in the SS, yeah? Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, and also welcome back to my very special guest, Dr. Rick Miller. Now, you talked about your father, how he's a first-class radio operator, and you've been having so many strange experiences. I was wondering, was there an incident that occurred that kind of made you want to go out of all of that and go be a dirt farmer? I mean, what was that incident? Rick, are you there? Apparently he's not there, so we'll try and reconnect him again. He may have hung off during the break, so let's try that one again. Sorry about this, folks. Now, I was also wanting to talk about, while we get Rick back on here, this big superstorm that's hitting the west east coast of the United States right now. Apparently, the largest residential tower block in New York, under construction at the moment, one of the big cranes on top of it has kind of snapped and is currently dangling down. And that's when the winds were only up to, I think, 28 miles an hour leading up to the storm. And apparently it's going to get up to like 60 or 70 miles an hour or something absolutely ridiculous. And hours ago when I was watching the footage on the breakfast program here, there was water coming over the banks on the south side, I believe, of the of Manhattan, with the storm surge, and it's predicted to be somewhere between 5 meters of storm surge. And 5 meters is a lot, you know. I'm a 6'4" man, so that's like nearly three of me stacked on top of each other. That's huge, man. So I want to reiterate that all the people in the United States, we all kind of need to send prayers or good thoughts or whatever you think will work. I don't really care. I'm just going to talk about it and just hope that many people pull through this really terrible incident. The timing of this particular storm is relatively interesting, leading right in to the U.S. election. So when this happens, obviously the politics kind of takes a backburner seat. Romney and Obama have both cancelled their political rallies. Obama has returned to the White House. I don't know what Romney's up to, but it's convenient for Obama because when a disaster hits a country, in any way, shape, or form, the country will normally get right behind their leader and feel that support, and that rapport seems to build and become solidified. So this storm is a very, very fortunate thing for the Obama campaign, just on that basis. There have been allegations by some radio show hosts that the storm may have been supercharged by HAARP or yeah, whatever. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I haven't seen any evidence to
corroborate that. Likely is the Earth is about to localize the infection. What do you think? You know, basically, Joseph Campbell said it best when he said, when you see the kingdom of the Father on Earth, the apocalypse has already occurred. It's perpetual in its potential. And whether there were 2 minutes to midnight or 2 seconds to midnight, my big concern, of course, is that 7.7 earthquake yesterday and the fact that Japan is sitting on a precipice. I believe, with my physics background, that within your lifetime, Japan will no longer exist as a continent. And with reactor 4 and the spent plutonium rod still exposed, you know, that is, in my mind, the first issue that all of the presidential candidates should have been asked. What is their plan for that?
Well, here's the item of business there. Japan's Fukushima irradiation. Now, I've talked to a number of people in Japan, and they say, oh, it's nothing, it's nothing. It's perfectly fine.
Well, that's not what our travel department says if you go online and see what U.S. Customs recommends. Well, there it is. Read what our government's saying. I wouldn't travel to Japan right now. I don't think anybody's safe there. And further, in Hawaii, I was in Kailua last year, and everybody was sick there, too, from the fog. You know, once that stuff gets up into the atmosphere, I mean, it's everywhere. We're watching now places where it's sprinkled down here in the United States, and we have, you know, a particle comes down, and you have a mutated dandelion. It's on my website. Some of these grow to 4 feet tall. It's a mutated, you know, radiation particle that fell down from Fukushima. The milk right now in San Francisco, in terms of cesium-137 levels, is actually 100% above EPA standards today, and FDA, as little as last week, said that those numbers are arbitrary and not to worry about it. However, in the United States right now, anybody that was born between 1950 and 1970, there is a 1 in 4 chance of a major thyroid epidemic going on here in the United States now from the 1953 above-ground proving tests in Utah that got into the Idaho milk. And the levels of first Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, and now Fukushima are way beyond that. And most of it, we're really lucky. I watched the ball when it came out off the island heading toward the island of Hawaii, and just before it hit Hawaii, the good major portion of it went up north into Alaska in a region that's uninhabited. But a small portion of it hit San Francisco, and they never told anybody.
Well, and also we had Dr. Bill Deagle on the show. He lives in California. And he reported that there was a 30% spike in miscarriage rates days after the Fukushima incident. Can you corroborate that at all?
I don't have any. I don't have any vector on that with data. I don't know what his variables were, so I can't make comment on that study. What I can say is that in a time like this, it doesn't make sense to have more than 400. Nuclear reactors still active on major fault lines throughout the world. That's crazy.
Hey,
you know, the difference between strontium-90 and cesium-137 compared to plutonium. Plutonium is a planetary killer. If you're a bacterium down 2 miles in a lava tube, you still won't survive.
It's just scary stuff, and I believe this is why a lot of people don't want to talk about Fukushima anymore.
Well, there's not much you can say except for a kamikaze that tried to go in and cap it. That's how it'll have to go at some point. And the problem is, if Japan slides down into that abyss, first. Oh, by the way, the back note on that one, Japan just recently purchased two major islands in the Kamchatka Sea up north of the Aleutians from Russia, and the total landmass is larger than Japan. How they're planning to evacuate 40 million people from the prefect, I haven't got a clue. But, newsflash, they're already thinking ahead because Japan is not going to exist shortly. You can see it. And without addressing Reactor 4, I mean, that's just plain crazy.
There was one thing that I found was really hilarious is that they said that a great solution to preventing this Fukushima radiation from going all over the place is to put a giant polystyrene dome over it.
Yeah, really. Tap it off. Yeah, except that when it goes down in the bottom part of the Earth, which is like pinball wizards, you don't have any clue where it's going to go from there. That's the part I'm worried about. It's not capped off. It's not. And what we call China syndrome, you know, is when it melts its way through the core and just goes right straight down to China. That's what it's all meaning. You don't know where it's going to go. It'll hit a rock, ricochet off, and the next thing you know, it's coming out of lava tube, and then there's no more life on Earth. That's most likely why they have Mars.
Wow.
Mars has more water than Earth. That's last week's newsflash. It's a structured water. It's a different form than we've ever seen before. I have this picture on my website of the Earth and the Moon with a little ball between them when the amount of water that's on Earth. And then I move another ball in to show you how much is on Mars. It's really a get-out-of-jail card in some sense of it.
Now, speaking of a get-out-of-jail card, you were in all these projects and stuff back in the 70s, but you became a dirt farmer for 35 years. I was wondering, was there an incident or something of that nature that made you radically change?
With what I am and what I want to do with my life, and it wasn't making weapons. What I'd like to do is the evolution of mankind's consciousness. I'd like to study that. I'd like to write about it. I'd like to see us evolve. And, of course, last year I came over to Brisbane to deliver some papers for Nexus magazine. I did an update on mind control from the period when I worked as synthetic telepathy. That, by the way, that new series is going to be a book, but it's also appearing in The Sovereign, which is a skateboard rag out of New York City for radical kids. And I'm writing to the young kids now, because that's who are going to make the changes in our Earth. In fact, I'm going to say that probably the people that actually do make the changes that are needed, will be those that are under 6 years old. I watched a 13-year-old address the United Nations Assembly 2 years ago. She was 13 years old. She'd come from someplace in Europe, and she said to the Assembly, "When you were my age, you didn't have to worry about the air you breathed or the water you drank or the food you ate. What have you done to us?" And the greed part of what's going on in this world, most of the financial thing is to try to break China. And I think they did. I think they won. I think China got broken. But there are issues going on that are far more important to discuss. And I'd put Fukushima as number one. Before Nibiru, aliens, whatever. We've got a problem here. And that is what everybody should be talking about until it's fixed. The bottom line is, I was up in Nova Scotia a couple years back doing some farm plants. I'm still a farmer. That's what I do. I put field crops in. And I watched the tide up there in Nova Scotia, which is one time zone even further than New York. I watched the tide change 60 feet in a normal day. And I did a little calculation, and that alone would be enough to power the entire East Coast, seaboard, everything, just from that tide change using buoys that they have in Oregon here as prototypes on how to, you know, convert tidal movement into electrical current. The grid is going to collapse. I don't know how long it's going to collapse. With the coronal mass ejections, the storms that New York is about to have, the grid's, imagine being in New York City and the grid's down for 3 days, and you're six flights up and you have to go to the bathroom. How does that work?
Well, apparently there's four major reactors in the path of this hurricane that's coming in today as well.
That's correct. The Lamrud faults are so scary. There are 16 reactive reactors on those things. They've already had a nuclear incident up near Chicago. I think it was probably associated with fracking, but I don't know. It spiked. There's a lot of speculation on the net. I don't know what's going on. I'm, doing what I can to basically offer up urban survival skills. And I will talk about prepper agriculture. And that kind of thing of, in the United States, they have just recently, the U.S. Army has classified a doomsday prepper as a form of terrorism.
Being a doomsday prepper is a form of terrorism. Okay. Well, I got a joke for you then.
You got it anyway. I can't believe it. Most people don't even understand. The whole thing is not real.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, what do you call somebody who's prepping for a nuclear winter? A chili prepper.
Look, if it's plutonium, you're not going to be able to stay down underground for 200,000 years. It will get into the water. It will contaminate everything.
Have you heard about these deep underground military bases that the U.S. government kind of thing? I always found this really funny. Let's say the world's going to end and they're going to evacuate and all the elite down into these big bases, right? Great. You'll be trapped for 100 years underground in the dark with the most satanic, pedophile, lying scum that the world has ever freaking seen in a million years. Brilliant idea. That's called punishment. We'll be right back, folks, with my very special guest.
What is about? There's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
And gentlemen, it's all just a little bit of history repeating, indeedy, as Shirley Bassey would say. My very special guest, if he's still on the line there,
I still am.
Rick Miller. Okay. Now, Rick, we've been talking about a lot of different things. Now, what do you know about HAARP?
HAARP? Well, Nick Begich is my publisher, and I knew Esalen because they tried to use my frequency bands on the work I did with HAARP. Didn't work. So, HAARP was originally a communications device that then had the possibilities of maybe doing something else. And there were all kinds of things that they were experimenting with it, because it's kind of weird physics. And the first, of course, was, can we control the world? Mind control. That one didn't work. But it does push the Van Allen belt. That does cause weather changes. It can be used as a weapon, aside from what its original intent was, which was communications. Now, to the full extent, I'm not privy. I can speculate. That's all I can do. I don't know. And that's that. Nick would be far more knowledgeable because he lives right up there in the middle of it. I remember when they first tried to put a second array down in central Australia, just south of Adelaide. And that was, dipolar. That meant they had a complete coverage. Europe went crazy. on legislation trying to outlaw and stop the Navy, and they just blew that off. You know, it was like, it's our national defense. You know, we're not going to do anything you want. We're going to do what we want. And that's what happened, and why there's a lot of gizmos that use similar technologies for other things. Now, what those are, I'm not going to even try to speculate, but I do know that HAARP can and has been used to as a weather control device, as a weapon. So beyond that, I don't know much about it. Nick Begich, he's my publisher and good friend, and he probably have a lot more to say about it. Eslin is dead now. Eslin was a plasma physicist like I am. That's working in the frequency bands that I do is, you know, in plasma physics like my dad. That's what I did. I actually created a tachyon factory in my junior year in high school and then built a linear accelerator where I actually created particles going faster than the speed of light. And what you did on the Mariner 1 is they created a small tachyon factory with muons. At that time, we called it a meson, but now it's an elementary particle. But back when I did it, I proposed it as a new meson field theory. And that's what I did in my junior year. Then in my senior year, I did application where you measure the radiation off water, and that'll tell you how much water is present or not by the slowing down of the speed of light. It's called Cherenkov radiation. I was the first American to do that as a high school student. Then they did that on Mars in 1964. The Mariner discovered there was water on Mars. In 1967, I saw three top secret documents when I worked at Boeing. In 1967, they did their first experiment in an effort to terraform Mars by detonating a nuclear warhead on the south pole of Mars. It didn't work. And then in 1968, 1 year before the moon, there was a joint manned expedition to Mars. I have no idea what happened. I saw the document in 1970, and the thing that was so curious to me was that our partner was the Soviet Union, whom we were in a deep Cold War. So a lot of what goes on in the media and news is exaggerated for a type of mind control of the populace to keep them from panicking or, you know, things of that nature. The presidents that are in the debates that they had over here this last week were embarrassing. You know, they're not even talking. Even Ralph Nader. We have 18 different people running for president, of which Obama and Romney are the two primaries, that, you know, out of the country. But there are 18 of them that are running, and not one of them. You know, I represent a league of concerned scientists. There's a group of us that are really concerned about Fukushima and Reactor 4. I mean, aside from, there are individuals that have gone over there from Sweden, wherever, and done their own studies, and they all come back with horror. It is a horror story. And there are more horror stories ready to happen any moment with these Frankenstorms and some of the other weird things that we're now enjoying on the East Coast.
So I'm kind of curious as well, your personal motivation, do you have a goal in mind? I mean, are you trying to get a certain set of information out to people?
I would like to see food become unregulated as a monetary currency form of exchange. I would like to see food become like water rather than see water become privatized. I would like to see everybody owns food, and where you live is determined by the gardens that you have in that town, just like you have parks. And I'd like to see gardening become a recreational sport like soccer. I'd like to see it where you choose where you want to live because of the kinds of foods you want to eat. You know, Gurdjieff, eat your environment. And each place has its own uniquenesses, high plains, you know, tropical, whatever. I'm going to suggest that food should not, if you take it off the monetary system and you make it on barter, what happens next is that the U.S. government cannot regulate it as a terrorist weapon like they do with certified organic now, and Monsanto cannot sue for non-use of GMO. It's like, because it's off the monetary system, it's like now it's its own thing, as it should be. Food in a given city, any city, has only, what, 2.5 days worth of food in the city before it has to be replenished from a centralized warehouse. I believe that we need to start thinking about proper agriculture and little tiny kibbutzim, or whatever you want to call those little rural, urban and semi-rural communities that bind together in some kind of a food border.
How would you bring industry back to rural areas? Because with nearly 100 years of major urbanization, it used to be 90% of people living in rural areas growing their own foods. Now it's
absolutely
about 10%.
That is what has gone wrong. And, you know, when the grid goes down, I don't think your Aborigines or your Maori are going to have as much of a problem with reality as people living in major cities where there is no kind of greenbelt. Even Chicago now is exploring a central community garden down in the downtown part of where you compete with each other on who grows the best tomato. This is the future. And to take a skyscraper, and on the top of the skyscraper you put a hydroponic system that feeds the building. That is the correct way to do things.
Well, I thought that that would be an interesting project, is to make a skyscraper in a central city that is essentially a vertical farm, and every single floor.
Well, they have that. I have it on my website. I have a blog on my website. There are already existing skyscrapers exactly doing that. That is exactly where the future is. And, you know, decentralizing our food base. And then, if you want that Dorito corn chip, you barter for it, or absinthe, or whatever. You know, you go after, you know, the things you don't have that you want, you know, things, not things you need, things you want, that's where you barter.
What about robotics? Do you believe robotics should be more involved with the mass production of good, clean, healthy food so that people don't have to do it? Or do you believe people need to have contact with the land and the food?
Well, there's lots of different directions on that. Hyland and Arthur C. Clarke, you know, with iRobot and some of the other things on the first laws of robotics, would talk about that concept or mentat. But really, actually, there's got to be a better way than trying to do more for less. You know, that's what Zeitgeist Moving Forward was all about. It's time to move on. We've had 400 years of currency. It doesn't work, and it's time to come up with something else.
So you think that maybe having a society whereby menial tasks are performed by machines, thus people are free to expand their minds, consciousness, do their art, invent things, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I'd like to, like they did in Greece. I would love to be a chef. I love to play in the kitchen. I like to take and prepare things and make them attractive, you know, visually, appetite-wise, etc. It's where food becomes something more than just grunt. The golden arches and the triggers that they use on the kids today, that's one of the reasons why I believe you're going to have to start with kids that are under 6 years old, probably. They're going to actually get it and change the world.
Well, it's true, and childhood obesity is now a big problem, and there was previously, and even a number of decades past, no such frickin' thing.
I know. It's. I have always, by the way, Bill Mollison was one of my best friends out of New Zealand. I remember I did the first interview with him for Acres USA back in 1985. And Bill's concepts of permaculture have been mutated a lot, because he's still alive, by the way. He's at Urbana, Illinois. And what I'd like to do is come over and walk your four corners and see what you're doing in New Zealand. I'll bet. Look, New Zealand strikes me.
We're going to break. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with my very special guest, Dr. Rick Miller.
divided we fall. Unity, please don't desert me. You're the sweetest honey from the honeybee. Unity.
Ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live 5 days a week on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, AM FM affiliates across the United States. You can have a look at the American Freedom Radio website and click on the affiliates button, and that will give you a list of radio stations that you can listen to. In New Zealand, we have Rush FM 87.7 in Hamilton, and also in the Southland area, we have iFinity FM, iFinityFM.com, I believe. So we're broadcasting all around the world, and we try to talk about things that are of significance. And my very special guest, Dr. Rick Miller, is one of those many, many voices who essentially you would not hear if not for the alternative media. Richard, welcome back.
Thank you. Sorry, I got carried away on my agricultural thing.
Well, you spent 35 years on it. I think being carried away was
kind of
the
they call me the postman here. You know, we don't have to go backward and do it the way Grandpa did it. I've got a 280Z that I restored. Datsun 280Z. It was the one that won the steeplechase up Pikes Peak. I'm a physicist. I like old sports cars. And I restored it the last couple of years, using it as a metaphor on restoring my body. When I replaced the rust on the one panel, I took and put a pin in one of my hips, that kind of thing. I've got so much titanium now in my body, I couldn't even consider cremation. But what I'm doing this year as a project with my 280Z is I'm going to convert it over to alcohol. and run it off my garden as a way to be off the grid. That's what I would call prepper agriculture, where you are growing some of your own food for heat and light and power. And there are things you can do better than corn, like I do comfrey for the bricks of sugar. And my costs on that are only going to be about $2 a gallon for the alcohol. And if they have a problem making Jack Daniels, I'll switch it over to methanol. That's the way that works. And they can't regulate me that way.
So I wanted to move on and spend the second hour talking about one of your other expertise, which is the area of consciousness. Would you be able to give us a bit of a backgrounder on that?
Yeah, I took my first hit of LSD with Timothy Leary back in 1964, when it was still legal. Harvard wanted to see what would happen if they gave it to a genius. They went through a bunch of studies. I was selected out of Washington State, and they came in, Timothy Leary and several others, and they talked to my mother and my professor at Washington State University. I was not prepared. I had never done anything. You know, I was a nerd. I still am in some ways. I remember I was at Deception Pass up at Hurricane Ridge, looking down 2,000 feet into Puget Sound, and the waters were boiling, colors and patterns and everything, and Timothy Leary leaned over and he said, "Wouldn't it be neat to jump?" I remember discovering Aldous Huxley and his doors of perception and how they were slamming shut in my head. And it was so vast, so rich, that it wasn't about paranoia. It was about the wonderment of how incredibly deep consciousness was. And really, what's actually happening, lysergic acid amide is a neurotransmitter that the brain actually creates, one of Timothy Leary's neurologic circuits. And LSD is a toxin, in a sense, and is, within 20 minutes of ingestion, broken down into all the inorganic salts and into the urine, and the resulting 20 hours of tripping is a result of your own brain chemistry in over-response. Now, what that does is it kickstarts your production of your own brain chemistries, like dimethyltryptamine is another one, ketamine is another, marijuana is another. These were all outlined by Leary. And the way I have envisioned it, it's like the way we wrap information into memes, whether something is physical, emotional, intellectual. It's a geometric enfolding or unfolding outward of information. It means it's beyond space-time. It's something more fundamental with hyperconsciousness and what you could call a hologram. A hologram is basically defined as N dimensions of information in N minus one dimensions. It's like a fractal, a abbreviation or resolution of the information or the hologram. And so the emotional plane in this model then would be seen as the physical plane with more detail. And that is why the higher self communicates to us not in symbols, but in feelings and senses that we can't identify as one of the five. When we started encountering extrasensory perception, we called it an extra sense, but in fact, it always came into consciousness in one of the five basic senses: clairaudience, clairvoyance, clairascension. There was ways that the conscious mind could not grasp how it could know something that was beyond space-time. How does it do that? And so it goes through a series of little rigmaroles, including astral projection, telepathy, clairvoyance, radiesthesia, and, of course, the precognition. And those were the five interstates that Rind originally tried to break information down. Now, it turns out that our concept of time is really basically a subset of a holographic system, which is about information, not space or time. Lawrence Lashawn wrote a book called The Medium, The Mystic and the Physicist, where he said the three grand illusions are space, time, and ego. Now, ego is not an illusion per se. It's a part of consciousness necessary for survival. But in the whole scheme of things, it's a little tiny dot in the big picture of what consciousness represents. And why consciousness is a very limited state. I did this survival, urban survival skills with Matt Stein in Reno last week, where mine was called Critical Decision-Making Power Tools, as used by Navy SEALs. Yes, I was SEAL unit number one. I was their physicist. We put the team together. It was a little different than the current teams in that we chose our candidates on their intuition, not their strength or their ability to blow up a building. And originally, what we wanted to do is enhance that so that when you, rather than flip a coin in the air to go right or left, what you did is had a 10-second protocol where you could somehow grasp something that consciousness could not and then go with it. If you're in the middle of zombie land, do you go right or left? And if you follow your gut and you work with hypnosis, my SEALs were able to increase their ability in guessing 400 times over where they are in normal conscious states. There is an altered state. It's very well defined right between here and there. That's where your ability in guessing increases 400 times. What I did is other studies in consciousness to move up the ladder in making super soldiers with other levels of consciousness, because you start with the physical plane. And so we worked with polysaccharides, you know, delivering oxygen to the body on a cellular level using pharmaceutical mushrooms. We would hybridize them using snake venom, trying to enhance the hybrid forms so that we had superfoods or true power tools. And then take that metaphor into other areas, like using biofeedback, brain drivers, didgeridoo for continuous breathing. Continuous breathing. What in all true martial arts, you're taught the difference in terms of speed over precision made the distinction between, let's say, Tai Chi or a Chan Buddhist form moving into a Shaolin form, which would be Hung Gao or Hung Gar. Now, with breathing, you can create an altered state of consciousness with controlling breath that it would make time slow down so that everything is in slow motion. You're hallucinating, but the precision of holding that edge right there would allow you to experience your movements as Tai Chi rather than Hung Gao, and allow you to have a far superior precision in your movement just because of slowing down consciousness. And these are the kinds of things that is my second book, which were the eight protocols dealing with each of Leary's neurologic circuits. And there are, going right on up the scale, all different forms of that, and how they're attacking us now with the current trends in mind control. That's what my talk was about when I did Nexus Magazine. And it was the new trends in mind control and how to defend yourself. Synthetic telepathy is pretty simple. What you do is you just mind your thoughts. And if you don't like your thought or it's counterproductive, you just eliminate it. Whether it's an important thought or not, it's going to detract you and create a doubt. Once you have a doubt, you have a thought form to produce, how did Merlin put it? Anything not specifically forbidden is mandatory. That means if it's possible, you can count on it. And so what you want in decision-making is a place in yourself that doesn't have doubt. And that is an altered state. And that's what we do now is I study these different layers in terms of what you can do. You know, even tweaking and paranoia have their place in the scheme of things, just like ego. And they're tools to be used. Now, in order to do some of these things, they're more difficult. You know, I mentioned my automobile. That's mythic living, where everything that you do is in metaphor or a reflection of other things going on in your life. as a metaphor. They would say, in Jungian psychotherapy, for example, that illnesses are a way that your subconscious is communicating to your consciousness, and as if you don't get it, the illness gets worse, like a Mack truck drives over you or whatever. And once you've gotten the message, there's no need for the disease. That's called honest journaling, where you form dialogue with yourself. And that's extremely important because everybody has different ways they talk to themselves. What you need to do is set up your own protocols, because what you're seeking is resolutions of information in the hologram. The brain is basically seen as a four-dimensional hologram of five space. That means you could change the movie.
So in a way, people get to experience whatever they want to experience.
Just that's exactly correct. Point. The old Thelma Cartel saying, I wouldn't have seen it if I hadn't have believed it.
So in that sense, do you believe maybe government or politicians should adopt these type things so that they can stop thinking about ways to destroy everybody's life?
Well, that's a leading question. You mean them and us? That's a Lao Tzu. You know, how did the Borg put it? Resistance is futile. You try to convince them they can't win, and then the war is over. That's the Lao Tzu and the Art of War. The whole concept of it is that you have personal responsibility for your own evolution.
Indeed, and we'll talk about more of that personal responsibility protocol after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, do me a favor, smash the television and burn the newspaper. That shit will never tell you that the president's a traitor. Believe what you want, but my evidence is greater. What you know about the Bilderberg and New World Order? What you know about the real fluoride in your water? What you know about the breed of uranium in the mortar? What you know about AIPAC controlling the reporter? What's wrong with the world? People kill people that other people command. Middle East is a modern day attack on a native land. Project eugenics planned on the common man. Expand the military industrial complex.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. You can also join in the chat room at TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. My very special guest is Rick Miller, and I would like you to actually just continue on, because I'm really fascinated by these by this consciousness.
You have no idea. It's so exciting to understand how we could simply, by changing our worldviews of the universe from a quantum to a holographic universe, allow the solution of changing the movie. The DNA, this was a paper I wrote in 1974, the DNA, it was called embryonic holography, and basically it suggested that the DNA was a three-dimensional hologram of four space, who you were, who you are, and who you will be. And if you look at your body, it's like an antenna radiating, you know, with amorphous semiconductors. It's got all kinds of things going on there, resonating. And you, on the top of it, you have this big crystal. It's constantly changing with liquid crystal phases and so on. So you have a four-dimensional hologram of five space. And five space is sliders. And it's most likely why all the saints in history have recommended everybody needs to meditate to train the mind. And basically that follows with my mathematical expression for consciousness in the first book of ESP that Nick Begich published. The second is Power Tools. And the third book is called The Non-Local Mind in a Holographic Universe. This is the book I'm writing right now. We have other sensory motor inputs. What they call paracoupling, for avian flight mechanisms in birds. I believe man has a similar thing. He's not consciously aware of looking at spectral lines of radiation, magnetic fields, and how they would shift so you know which magnetic north is, you know, by just looking. However, man has all these different kinds of biological mechanisms going on where there's a convolution of information. It's the key is how to get access to it, like talking to your higher self, to your other nine-tenths of the cerebral cortex. That is part of what the Soul's Code is all about. That's James Hillman. The Soul's Code in search of character and calling. Mine is to somehow unite the world in some kind of a food-oriented program based around agriculture as an integral part of your lifestyle. You don't have to be a farmer. You can graze. You can wildcraft. I had a friend that was an anthropologist at the UW that used to walk to work from a big commune he lived in, and he brought it, when he's walking to work, he harvested his lunch on the way in, dandelions, whatever. He used to, his big one was to eat, you know, slimy slugs in front of little kids when he'd say, well, if they can eat my food, then I guess I can eat them. got across his point. He'd lived with Aborigines that ate grub. There's each environment that we find ourselves in, habitat, has a personality and offers up similar chemistries of other habitats. That's one of the reasons why probably Gurdjieff would have suggested, you know, to eat your environment. It's like macrobiotics. You know, you climatize to weather patterns and some of the other kinds of things. If you're living on the coast, obviously, you should eat fish. It's a metaphor. And to work yourself into a place of survival, high-end, is awareness. That's what it's about. That's what IQ is your quality of adaptability. You know, how quickly can you change to survive? And, you know, so that's where we started with SEAL Unit Number 1. We started training them in their ability to think and what they would think and why. You know, I guess I said it before, I'd like to repeat it. Man has a responsibility for the thoughts he chooses to entertain. Start there. Work with food and water. Water would be the first thing you do because that's the most important thing going into your body, survival-wise. Foods and your choices of foods determine whether or not you've got something to launch from to become spiritual. You can't be spiritual. Whoever saw a fat doctor able to be healthy and treat others? It's not, it's a, you know, it's like a oxymoron. You don't, it doesn't make any sense. The doctor can't do that to himself. How is he going to do it for you? It's a metaphor. Always, always in metaphor. Like teachers. A teacher cannot take you any further than that teacher themselves have been. Now, that doesn't mean it stops you from going other places that teacher is not. That's why you have other teachers. And what you're doing now is trying to, I would hope, take personal responsibility for your own evolution. It isn't going to be handed to you like the rapture. You're going to have to go out and earn it. And there will be blood. That's a movie over here in the United States about oil. It's called There Will Be Blood. You know, there are going to be... The prime directive in the New World Order is that there are too many people in the world, and that before any civil rights, advancements in medicine, advancements in science... are actually true blue, 50% of the world has to die. Now, who makes those decisions? 9/11 in the United States was a false flag. I proved it simply by physics. You can watch the rate of fall of the building. The rate of fall was in 3% free fall. That means it was demolition. That is, and it would take my crew, rig it 3 months to rig that building so it would fall like that. Several buildings were rigged. And what was that about? Why didn't they tell the public? Why did the public not care? Why did the public not ask, you know, how was our Pentagon hit with an airplane? Where are the wings? You know, how's that work? And nobody cares because the first layer of mind control is to get you in your gut. That's why Monsanto is... Monsanto, let's get me started on that one. Monsanto is not a pharmaceutical house. It has and always been a weapons house. In World War II, it made 2,4-D and Paraquat, and later Agent Orange. They worked as defoliant weapons. And then they grabbed a hold of the seed, and then they started making GMOs. And today, There is a 3-year project they've been into it with DOD to alter a specific gene in wheat that activates a gut, a bacteria in your gut that you got from a cat. It's normally inert. It's T. gondii. And you check that one out. And that is a weapons project where they attack your lower brain. Your gut is convoluted, you have neurotransmitters, and there's a lot of decision-making that comes out of there, including your food choices and the narcotics that wheat and other grains bring into your awareness. And the fact that I had been studying consciousness ever since I was this acid trip, I have been fascinated on the possibilities of how to use altered states of consciousness. Why? Well, magic is defined as the art of changing consciousness at will. It is, in fact, a higher form of physics and was reserved for the ultra elite of Europe for centuries. It was only this last century when Aleister Crowley would have suggested using drugs as a valid form of magic, which, by the way, they are. But like any going through the woods to grandma's house shortcut, all shortcuts also have the risks that go with them. Addiction. That's why Crowley died as a drug addict in Hastings. And so it's not a good thing or a bad thing. It's a be aware thing. And not just shun away emotions and other kinds of things. They're a richness of what makes us, I don't know, a superior species. Now, even then, I have a problem with man being the center of the universe because guess what? I believe there are 4 mammals on this planet that are more evolved technically than man. I think I can argue some serious arguments. I was with Carl Sagan when we did Day of the Dolphin in John Lilly's labs. I was the one with the math, and I have languages. I do Old Hebrew and Greek. And when I was there 10 days listening to the clicks and whistles and the cadence frequency bands, I suggested that it was a form of Clifford algebra. And that's Abram Moles in Aesthetic Perception and Information Theory. There you go. The quality of redundancy in Clifford algebra was 10 times more efficient than Hebrew, which I speak fluently. And so with that said, the dolphin's language was a more evolved language system than anything we had on Earth. Plus, they're now doing little things with these little sonar bubbles. They call them sonoluminescence. And my alma mater, MIT, has only just now this last year reproduced that phenomena as a form of cold fusion. And what they do is they blow these little sonar bubbles. They're full of light. And when they play with them and they make them into circles and loop them around and dance with them and things. And then when they let them go and they pop just before the surface of the sun, of the water, they do it in such bright light that it's a form of cold fusion, and that's their art form. And an orca has a cerebral, a bit higher on the food chain, has a cerebral cortex that's literally twice the size of man, and he's firing 60% of it. Now, by definition, that's God, not our God, but going places man will never comprehend. And then you have 2 other cetacean, pilot whale and the manatee, all 4 of which have bigger brain cases than man, crunching power. And then when you start looking at the Earth and the mycorrhiza, which is a quantum computation algorithm, you start to realize that consciousness is all around us. We just haven't noticed it yet because of our own, Carly Simon thinking this song is about us.
Well, you talked about responsibility. You know the old saying that with power comes great responsibility. I believe it's the opposite way around. With taking great responsibility, you earn great power.
Well, Castaneda had, in teachings of Don Juan, would have suggested there were 4 enemies of man. The first was fear. And once you overcame fear, you achieved personal power. And personal power in itself corrupted you. And then when you started to see things more clearly, the clarity became also an enemy. What was the 4th enemy? What I'm currently enjoying, old age.
Well, I think as youth is wasted on the young is another great old saying there.
Well, that whole idea that power corrupts and total power corrupts totally, there's nothing wrong with that. I basically believe, rightly or wrongly, I think I can form an argument, just like I did with cetacean, that there are two cultures on this earth. There is strong evidence to indicate there was a close encounter in the 1850s where technology was exchanged and created a new society that did, at that time, have space travel. And I think there are two cultures on this earth, one with and one without space travel. And truthfully, I am it's not right, but then the last chapter in my Power Tools deals with the nature, besides in an ontologies of mystical states, it also addresses the issue of the difference between free will and true will. And really, man does not have free will. Man has true will. And I am, truthfully, a magician. I'm not a Crowleyite. I do believe in the importance of adding a mystery school to physics. And I think I'm a good enough physicist to suggest how it might best work. I think a holographic universe allows the possibilities of understanding what consciousness might be, that a quantum universe is not as indeterminate, that's a good word, with like a Bose-Einstein condensate where you have two particles that are somehow simply connected at opposite ends of the universe. And I would simply suggest that rather what it is the same particle with two cameras on it or resolutions of the information. And that space-time is a subset of something way more important, which I would suggest is information. That's what fractal math is. That's what Mendelbrot, Julia, and May patterns are about with Glick. And some of that work is basically to suggest that the universe is about information, not about space-time.
Mm. Now, you use the Lord Acton quote there, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. The third line of that quote, which is often never used, is all great men are inherently evil.
Well, there's that. That's why we don't. I think anybody that would want to be president has got to have a screw loose. You know, politics, I'm a nerd. I have no illusions that I really don't know what's going on from that point of view. To have something override logic is, I guess, metaphysically important, but I can't get it. And I taught metaphysics at Harvard. So, you know, there it is. I have some questions that I don't understand. I don't know what they mean yet. I'm still not there yet. But I'm not trying to be a great man. What I'd like to do is leave footprints and have you write a better book. Small steps, Allie. Just like in the movie Contact.
Well, this is the thing, is that you only have a certain amount of time on this earth, and then once you're gone, your knowledge will die with you unless it's recorded and put down for posterity's sake so that future generations will be able to look on the things that were done 100-plus years ago and go, hey, this guy was way ahead of his time, and advance their research and their creativity and their understanding of the universe as it stands. Richard Miller is my guest, and we'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the final segment here with my very special guest, Dr. Rick Miller. Now, I wanted to kind of continue on this consciousness thing, but I'm also conscious of the fact that we only have one more segment left. And I was just wondering, is there anything that you normally don't talk about? Because it's a little too far.
You mean David Bowie falling to Earth? You wanted to know about bunkers. What I'm doing now is I'm networking rural communities and bunkers, setting up an infrastructure for if and when the grid goes down. I have a lot of trails on my websites. My website, I guess you could give them my website. I'm richardallenmiller.com, and A-L-A-N for Allen. I'm RichardAllenMiller.com, and then welcome to the abyss, because the off the grid, there's a bunch of articles that I've written on that, on mind control, some of the other things I do. I have a daily blog that has at least 10 changes every day, including, you know, what's going on in different parts of the world. I try to do it so that I have filtered for you what I think are the important things to pay attention to this day. I think the presidential elections over here is a joke. I'm embarrassed for us and the way we must look to the rest of the world. I am, please take my humble apology, I'm not part of this madness, and yet here I am in the middle of it, and trying to be a voice of reason in some of this. There are, you know, a lot of different people now starting to prep themselves for some kind of eventual reality. They're called doomsday preppers. They're, you know, what is it? National Geographic has a whole series on them. I'm going back to a big conference full of them. There's going to be a whole bunch of doomsday preppers back there, and that's what I'm doing, teaching urban survival skills. And basically, you know, how to pull yourself out of a jam, how to listen to your gut. These power tools that I'm writing about can be used for your own personal evolution. You know, brain drivers can do more than just teach you how to control your brain. I have not been meditating all my life. I'm a satsangi. I was initiated by Charan Singh, the real deal. And I do what I can, but I do not have or did not have the brain of someone that had been meditating for 30 years, like Persinger might suggest. How do I get there quick? Well, that's that forest with the big bad wolf and grandma in the woods. You know, shortcuts don't work quite as well. I started with biofeedback and went to brain drivers. Had some bifurcation where there were changes in my brain, and then I was able to, for example, witness my behavior. Now, that is a skill that, for example, will allow you to change your belief systems like you would a pair of clothing. That means, for example, that if you were a staunch Christian and two aliens walked in the door, the big question in what the bleep movie is, would you be able to see those two aliens? And so belief systems are not, should not be used as given assumed truths as much as tools for survival. And I have a pair of as a metaphor, I have a pair of bell-bottom pants I will never throw away. I'll never fit in them again. You know, my waist will never be down like it was back then. But it represents a part of my life, like Christianity or whatever, beliefs, that's important to me and comfortable. It's just that in the middle of Iraq, having that belief system may be get me killed. And as such, what I need to do is learn how to change my beliefs like I would a pair of clothing. And that would allow me to have a more entree into that layer of reality in a survival point. That's what I'm trying to say in terms of evolution of consciousness. It goes in small steps. It's like a hologram where you start with your physical, emotional, intellectual, archetypal, microtubule. Leary called them memes. These are the way we classify experiences as bits of information. And I was going to say one thing about time. You know, the brain is actually two brains with a neodol or bottleneck down at the bottom connecting the two. That's why you can see it in your mind's eye, but you can't say it, you know, because it's trying to get from one side to the other. And Robert Arnstein defined time as a duration of consciousness. It is the way you wrap proteins and store information. And it's quite possible to realize that you go beyond space-time to a place where you have such things as five space and then six space. And actually, in string theory, the system I use, there are 10 universes with an interconnecting 11th one or wormhole, you know, quantum foam thing. That's super string. Anyway, that's pretty much what I wanted to say. I have books for sale if you're interested in what I'm doing. I'm now speaking at conferences over, and I love to come to the East New Zealand. I have been invited by some rangers, Aussie rangers, to go on a walkabout in Adelaide with some Aborigines and exchange how we would survive in a given desert, how they do it, how a Navy SEAL would do it. And I think that would make a very enlightening demonstration of the different cultures and what they now call cybernetic anthropology, the importance of your mentat and how you approach your environment.
Now, I've been talking about this basically, conspiracies and all of these eclectic fields of research that I've been delving into as a radio show host and a quote-unquote conspiracy theorist. I believe the definition for conspiracy theorists, as far as I'm concerned, is a person who believes that powerful people who have a lot of influence use their power to maintain their influence. And a coincidence theorist is
something. Well, of course, why would they not? I mean, you know, that would be a survival thing right out of the gate. Control fantasy is the way I would approach that. Control is actually a fantasy. It's not possible. It may seem like that for a certain period of time, and there will be oppression, and like I said, there will be blood. But really, man is moving nicely forward and backward. I think it was Rudolf Steiner that said we're actually literally devolving. You know, right now, at this point in time, we're not like the Greek and the lofty cultures of philosophy and art. And what I would love to do is somehow reinstate the importance of magic as a more advanced form of physics, where, like a woman, the way she would drive an automobile, and I don't mean a woman, but I'm using, like, an individual, when they get in an automobile, they don't necessarily just think about how an internal engine combustion works. They go through rituals. They put the key in this way and they turn it that way. They have expectations of what should happen next. And to some extent, that is a magical way of thinking. That's the way we live right now, your iPods. What's wrong with the picture, though, with these Christian groups that would have their kids use iPods and yet want to also teach them creationism? I don't get it. That's a Bill Nye thing, the science guy. And he had death threats by just suggesting that. Can you imagine? And his point was, that mentat isn't going to make any more food in the world for people. It's going to hurt people, not help people evolve. So why would you want to foster those kinds of beliefs in the light of the technology that you're also embracing? There's an incongruity there.
Now, I've thought of it like it's a world of possibilities, and for each new thing you learn, it's another possibility. It may not necessarily
be 100% true. Like I said about conspiracies, you know, imagination is all there is, which means how could there not be conspiracies? How could there not be aliens? You know, the very fact that you can imagine them in your mind's eye automatically makes it real.
See, I feel confused sometimes, Rick, and I've kind of tried to silence that confusion that I've been feeling a lot recently, in fact, by thinking that everything I know or believe that, that over time has since been proven to be wrong, right?
So, pretty much the philosophy of Plato. Now, you know, basic form. The constructs are that you need a foundation from which to integrate an event or data. And so that's the purpose of ritual, you know, like preparing the food before you eat it, that kind of thing. That's why the Japanese and their tea service, where they have elevated the art of food to a point where it's like a ritual, like shabu shabu. Now, that is a type of relationship I would suggest in everyday life, across the board, in everything that you did, that you had metaphor going on. And that if you chose, that's chapter 6 in my book of power tools. That's a power tool to see things in layers of a hologram where there's less and more. Most of us are pretty much caught up in the physical plane because of, you know, survival, food, money, that kind of thing. None of it's real. Even if they put you in jail, you're still going to have everything you need. It's a question of what you want to what you need, and the war that goes on between the savage and the civilized part of you. That's another book I've written called The Modern Alchemist. The dialogues that you have within yourself and the various stages of enlightenment that you have to go through, including such things as Dark Night of the Soul.
All right. I want to thank you very much for coming on the show today.
We'll have to do it again.
Yeah, hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Cool. That'd be fine. I can go anywhere you want.
Well, and after this, I'll connect you via Skype, and we'll have a chat with the listeners as well. It's off air, just, you know, off the cuff and what have you, if you're willing to donate a bit more of your valuable time. Other than that, ladies and gentlemen, I believe that everything I know to be true is in fact wrong. So when I'm proven wrong, it means I'm right about being wrong. But if I am proven correct, I'm pleasantly surprised. And luckily, my confusion goes away.